Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 13 of IGL Weekly. I'm your host, Andy Whiteside. I've got with me Chris Feeney, the local channel sales engineer. Chris, how's it going?
As always, Andy, it's a pleasure. It's going well. Spring has arrived, and so is NCAA basketball, which is why I've got my invisible mug on from my Final Four experience a few years ago. So,
yeah, that's funny. You're holding the mug up in front of the fake background, and the mug just disappears. That's
I know. Isn't that pretty cool?
Yeah.
My alma mater was George Mason University, so it was their one and done sort of Cinderella season. They made it to the Final Four and got trounced by Florida.
Yeah, you know, that's the love and hate of this time of year. At least it's exciting for a little bit. I wish I had more time to enjoy it. Let's do something real quick. When I jumped in a while ago to start the podcast, I accidentally did it from my virtual desktop. It's a story I like to tell every so often that, you know, when I get busy in the morning, especially when I have a single monitor, which I'm down to a single monitor at the moment, I forget I'm in my virtual desktop because it just works, you know, really well. And then I started the podcast and we had to say, whoa, wait a minute, we got to back out of that. That's not the best way to do it. That's still kind of the hardest thing to do is bi-directional audio and video. However, it does work well enough, especially on a high-speed network. But you were talking to Seb just now about your new setup. Sounds like you're running a new IGEL UD7 and a whole bunch of monitors. What do you have going on there now?
Yeah, so heading into the holidays, I said, you know what? I've been equipping partners and they were, you know, a lot of them were testing out Teams Zoom optimization. I said, you know what? I'm going to live off of an IGEL device full time. And so, but I was like, I got to figure out my real estate on my desk here. And so I got rid of my Hutch. I bought a 3-monitor stand off of Amazon. Then Costco had a sale on some 24-inch, monitors. And so I set that up and got a UD7. First it was the UD3. I was going to start a UD3. And I was like, well, I need the 3 monitors. So I went with the UD7 and was running off the older model until I got the new one just over the weekend. And so just yesterday, I finally got it set up. And it's a beautiful thing. I'll just say that. When I launched my Citrix desktop from the cloud, it just automatically just bam spans across all 3 monitors. And I was like, I so want a Citrix desktop right now or some kind of virtual desktop. Unfortunately, we don't have it yet. I think it's coming internally, but it's awesome. So
I have a slightly similar story, but very different at the same time. I moved offices over the weekend into a different room in my office. And that monitor you see in the background, that's actually running off of IGEL, the latest operating system, or the latest until we talk today. And it's actually, I'm using it not as a thin client to access a virtual app or virtual desktop. I'm using it as a thin client to do a display. So that's just looping through our website in the background, but that's a
fun nice.
You're hooked up to a small form factor IGEL operating system managed thin client from our UMS down in Atlanta.
Sweet.
That's a big IGEL story there. And it's just a display unit, but still works.
Nice.
Still makes the magic happen.
Have you had a chance to play with your Raspberry Pi? All right, the IGEL Raspberry version?
Well, I'll wait on you to come down and show me how it works and give me an overview of it. So that's on you guys.
All right, I'll bring mine too. We'll figure it out together.
All right. Well, we got Seb with us. Seb is our IGEL community guru. Seb, how's it going?
Pretty good, I must say. It's a short week here in Germany because we have an Eastern time. So Friday and Monday will be a holiday. So I'm freaking out at the moment. Looking forward to the weekend. But besides that, I'm really enjoying the day today. And we have a community session today in the afternoon regarding tips and tricks just after our podcast. So, yeah, it's a session-rich day.
Hmm. That's good. I'd love to attend some of those. I have so much tech guy stuff I want to do. It's really around IGEL is a big part of it. I just, you know, I got a business to run. I wish I could do more things in the community. Be awesome if I could.
Oh, you get money for all that stuff? Because we're doing it for free usually, so.
Yeah, I just wish I could consume more of it. I just don't have enough time.
Sure.
So, guys, we decided a little bit ago that the podcast for today, we would jump into the latest operating system from IGEL, which I feel like we just did one on the latest, but you guys are moving really quick. The new IGEL software release video associated with UMS 6.07.100 and the IGEL Cloud Gateway 2.03.100. You know, my this isn't a complaint at all, but I have all these little USB drives that I use to create my converters, and I can't put the entire version number on those things. So I end up having to put some abbreviated version. Not a big deal. But I noticed that the other day when I was trying to, you know, image a couple devices from the USB creator that you guys have.
I got to laugh. I don't know if this will come across in the video, but I'm holding in my hand three USB sticks with OSC versions on them. 11.0 something or other and some other version of 11. So I sometimes forget and have to boot up like, which one was that again?
So sometime in the podcast, I'll step away over my bag here and I'll pull out my Crown Royal bag where I keep all my USB drives that I carry with me. And people always laugh, but it's the best IT bag I've ever had for miscellaneous stuff. Better before the drawstring broke, but still it works out. So Seb, this is a video blog. It's really a video that's posted on the community site. So we're not going to be able to walk straight through it. However, I know you and Mr. Brown the other day had a conversation around what you guys cover in the video. You want to just walk us through why another release so soon for both the you know what? I've totally screwed this up. Guys, I have totally screwed this up. This is really about a release around the UMS, not the iGel Workspace OS. So forgive me for that. This is
not another release. Kind of boast, to be honest. So you're not that wrong. With still the release was 6.07 and ICG 2.0, but 2.03, but from the AgileOS perspective, we just released it. It was, I don't know, 1.5 weeks ago, something like that, the 11.05 version. So you're not that far from the reality.
Well, yeah, but we did a podcast on that version last week, said that was with the corporate guys that we worked with. So my idea that you guys had already released another operating system is totally wrong. Probably good that we're talking through this in front of the group here. So it's not a new operating system for iGel. It's a new universal management server and a new ICG. So let's jump into that. Seb, why now? Why is there a new release? What's the overall idea of how long has it been since you guys released the last one?
Let's start maybe with the general block that Doug and the product marketing and product management team created. We never had that kind of session for the community, so we'll just go in a short introduction about what we are talking about. What we had a couple of times and a couple of years ago is that for every release that iGel is delivering to the market, we got an internal briefing from our product management. So it was a short session, sometimes just 10 minutes, sometimes an hour, sometimes half an hour about what the new release of iGelOS, of ICG, of UMS is bringing. And sometimes also with a few tips and tricks about how to use that kind of function and which is the purpose of that specific feature set. And these sessions were such interesting for our internal proposal that we went the route to ask the product management if we could maybe deliver a similar content to the community. And that's where the block is coming from. So our hope, and hopefully it's a commitment you also receive from the product management people, is that we will get that kind of content on every, hopefully, major release, and if we have a little bit more, like maybe on every release of our product. So that's where we come from. That's what we are trying to cover with that video. So coming back to the 11.05, because most of the feature set, not everyone, but a lot of features that we will speak about in a couple of seconds, were first integrated in the 11.05, which was released, I would have to double check, but I guess 1.5 weeks ago, and couldn't be used on the last version of 6.06, 110 version of the UMS. Just because they wasn't implemented, a new feature set was needed on the UMS side, or sometimes the firmware holds some feature set that are not available in profiles. And that's what we are now covering with the 6.07 version of the UMS. We are covering now all the feature sets that we already integrated into the operating system, but weren't available in the UMS at the moment. And especially, I don't know, Chris, if you would agree, but this heartbeat feature, the last contact feature, is one of the features I was looking for, I would say, since I joined iGel, to be honest. Because just to, before giving the opportunity to Chris to answer my question is, let's imagine that you have a device that is somewhere outside of your company, and it's sometimes connected through ICG, sometimes not, and you want to see when did the device last time reach the UMS. You could tweak around with the view and the last boot time and try to get that kind of information there. But honestly, it didn't cover all the use cases we needed for users, or let's say even for administrators who wants to get rid of dead devices who were somewhere on the network, but weren't contacted, I don't know, 2 years ago, the last time through SCG and UMS. So Chris, sorry, I just interrupted your response, but that's one of the features I was looking for.
No, I agree. I think for those that have been using iGIL for a while, you probably have seen scenarios where a device that is all of a sudden red instead of green. And so sometimes that's a false positive. I know Andy and I, you know, have talked about that. Sometimes it's a device coming through maybe a NetScaler, for example, before it gets to the ICG and playing around with some of the keep alives or whatever it might be. And so I think this new heartbeat kind of thing, it's helped resolve some of that. So you kind of get rid of some of those false positives. But you know, I've been doing some cleanup in my own UMS. I've got some old demo devices and whatever, and some old POCs that I did with customers from the Fed side, and just, you know, clearing all that stuff out. So I think it's definitely some maintenance updates with this. But also, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but the UMS web app is starting to get more and more feature functionality with, you know, overall long-term, you know, the Java rich console that everybody's been used to for years. A lot of those features are now going to be working their way towards the web app over time.
So Chris, before we move into that, I did want to come back to that, what Seb brought up. So I have a problem that I was telling you about the display behind me. We have a problem at Zintegra where, because of the UD Pocket and the iGIL OS creator, I must have 50 devices that I put iGIL on and at some point register with our UMS. And I wonder, you know, in my past when I would go look, how can I determine which ones haven't talked to the UMS in a long time? That sounds like part of what you guys have enhanced here, so that we can track down how many devices Andy's, you know, spun up that's no longer being used, so that my IT department's not mad at me for consuming so many licenses and junking up their console. I mean, I literally have done it three times this week as I moved offices. I was in over the weekend and I was putting iGIL on three different devices, and I know some of those will get aged out fairly quickly and won't be used, and yet they've all been registered. So Seb, it sounds like you guys have addressed that from the UMS side, where it's a lot easier to determine who's phoned home when, right?
Exactly. So that's exactly what this feature is covering, because you can determine from the UMS side how often does the heartbeat feature needs to contact the device to check if it's available or not. So especially for lost devices that went stolen or just lost because you lost your UD pocket somewhere in the train or whatever. I mean, the use cases for losing a device are quite multiple. So that's one of the biggest features that I'm seeing now in the UMS 607. I mean, it's not a huge feature. It's nothing that would save the world or bring the peace on earth, to be honest. But I like the approach that we are now finally out. Available for sorting out all devices or not anymore used devices outside of the UMS. And it goes, let's say, more or less hand in hand with what Chris mentioned already. Because even if you are switching a little bit from the UMS console now to the UMS web app, at least in my mind, the UMS web app is going a little bit more, at least from my opinion, enterprise ready. So we have a couple of banks in Germany where I was delighted to have some POVs in the last 3 years. And they were asking for a feature that makes absolutely sense to me to, hey, I just sent out a reboot job, so reboot command to a couple of devices. So that doesn't sound that critical. I mean, besides the fact that you would definitely interrupt the work of some users. But let's imagine you do that on a folder. And if you're unlucky on the top folder of your UMS, and you are already an enterprise customer with, I don't know, 20,000 or 30,000 or 100,000 devices. Let's imagine you send now, by mistake, a comment out. Wouldn't it be great if the UMS web app would just notice you, hey, are you really sure that you want to do that? Because you are contacting 30,000, 1,000 devices. Is it really on purpose or is it a mistake? That's, let's say, a part of what Chris mentioned, this new method to get mass I guess the term was mass actions or mass comments to devices is something that I was looking to for years now, and was a feature request that went the route back to the roadmap finally. So that's definitely one thing I will have to mention. We are speaking about the UMS web app. We're not speaking about the UMS counter. There you can do whatever you like. You will not be notified about any kind of, are you sure you want to do that to 30,000 devices? Hey, Seb, the UMS web app, definitely.
Can I interrupt you for a second? So when you talk about, and this is for you and Chris, and Chris, you were heading down a really good topic with this whole thing. Is this really UMS as a service that iGel is developing, or is this just a web way to get into the UMS server that you, the customer, host?
The latter. Publicly speaking, iGel doesn't have a plan to do a service capability where we're offering up, for example, so we're really talking about the UMS console servers installed in a customer environment, whether that's a true customer or a partner managing it for their customer kind of thing, right? So that servers can reside in the cloud, it can reside in the traditional prem. So, but the web app is really, again, it's sort of, you're taking years and years of Java functionality and then porting that into a web-based component of the UMS console. So it's more just taking that to the next level. At some point, maybe that will become, something you mentioned earlier, but I'm not authorized to speak about that because I don't know it.
This sounds like VMware, right? Their vSphere console went from a fat app written on C# or whatever it was, and then eventually it became a web app sometimes when you wanted to use a web app, and then eventually it became full-time web app, and you don't even use the vSphere client anymore.
Yeah, I would say, will we eventually get rid of the Java code? I can't speak to that, but I think the goal is certainly to make the web app much more feature rich. It started off initially with just as a help desk use case, right? Give some basic functionality to help desk folks. And then as each release comes out, and just so we talked about this earlier, iGel, looking at the roadmap, expect quarterly releases of the UMS this year and every year for the most part, right? So that'll be, the next one is probably, I think, July. And then the next one after that will be like October. So it'll be 608, 609 or something like that. So that's the UMS. ICG is generally speaking somewhere along line, but maybe not as often depending on what needs to be updated or whatever. So, we are doing a video for this, right? So I was going to pull up an article on that feature we were just talking about. People like looking at pictures while we're talking. Is that cool?
Well, I'm not sure we're doing the video on this one yet. I've still got to get my office together a little bit. But yes, that is the intention.
All right. Going
forward, is we're going to post the podcast as well as the video of the podcast to give people a different way to.
All right. We'll give them a teaser. We won't do it now, but. All righty.
So guys, we're not going to get through this if we don't move along. I assume there's a few things. So we've got the ability to see last login, last activity. Seb, real quick on that one before we totally move away from it. Will that also tell me who the user, if there was a logged in user on the iGel unit, will that tell me who last used the unit? So maybe I could track it down that way as well.
That's already implemented. That's the user login history. So if I get you right, Andy, if you want to see which user logged in, logged out, and obviously the last user is also shown in the history, that's a feature that already integrated since a couple of versions now. So if you want to use that, just be aware that we have our two different check flags to set, one in the UMS administration part and one under system remote management. But that's maybe something we can maybe cover in an upcoming session, because it's better to show it. Because we just see one part, but we mostly miss the second one. And just because we are now worldwide, it's not available by default just because of data privacy, right? So, but it's there. So it's not only the device, but also the last user.
What if a user doesn't actually log into the iGel unit, they log into a Citrix session or a VMware session from there? Can we see that user logging in so that we can track it down?
Yes, definitely. The only thing that we are not seeing at the moment is a Firefox session, if I remember right. So if you're looking into the Netscaler or Storefront through a web session, then no. If you're looking at the local Citrix Workspace app client or the VMware View Horizon, then yes. And obviously, the Active Directory login in prior if you're using the LightDM as the login.
Sure.
Yeah. And then one other thing, I guess I'm assuming we can also see the IP address or the private and maybe even the public IP address of the unit come in?
Not at the moment, but it's an upcoming feature. So you see at the moment the private IP address, but not the public one, if I remember right. So if you speak about an ICG connection, and that's where we have a couple of requests already. How can we give the public IP address back to the UMS? That's something that is already upcoming as a feature. But in the meantime, if you have a request like that, just coming into the community, I created a script to give that information back through the UMS structure tag.
Yeah. Okay. So Chris, before we move on that topic, because that's probably a big one, any additional comments on the tracking of the device and when it last logged in and who logged into it, where it logged in from, what is private IP? Any additional comments to that?
So it's sort of tied to this. I mean, I've had questions, right, as people have been onboarding new devices, right? They I'll get a screenshot of, hey, I've got, 50 UD pockets all with the same ITC something or other. It's usually the MAC address of the device they literally plugged into, right? Even though the unit ID is different. And so they're asking, is this normal? I'm like, well, technically, yes, if you're using the same machine to onboard these things. But one of the things that kind of kicked around was an idea. And if somebody in the community has this out there, awesome. But a quick way to rename that device based on some criteria or whatever. We have capability to do that manually within the product, automatic naming conventions. But so we're kind of toying around with some kind of utility or some kind of tool to maybe do something that'll help name that device and make it a little bit more easy to understand who is using that device, that type of thing. So that's all I've got on that for now. So.
Okay, and then on the idea that Igel is moving their Java-based console into some type of web-based console where you could access it through an HTML5 browser, any additional comments on that before we move on to the next feature we want to cover?
Yes, I will miss the console, to be honest. I liked it.
Well,
I like not the Java approach, but the console itself, I must say. I would be missing it a little bit if it disappears in a couple of years, but it's more, let's say, a special relationship to that console. I don't know why, but it's sometimes it's hard to leave a baby or a child leaving the house and leaving his own world, and that's what I'm feeling with the console. So seeing the web app coming up is cool, but I'm crying a little bit when it comes to the console death in the near future.
Was as a VMware administrator, a Citrix administrator, right? When those consoles started to move more towards web apps, it was a little it was a little concerning. I was comfortable with the other ones, and the web apps would crash a lot at the time. If you used the Microsoft management consoles a bunch, you saw those crash a ton too. So you're happy to get away from those. But we're to a point like with the VMware console now being web app. Web-based, maybe exclusively, but certainly for the most part, it's rock solid. It's like a friendly old friend now versus being my nemesis, as you were just pointing out back in the day.
Absolutely.
So guys, we've covered two features. There's probably 20 more, but between the new UMS and the new ICG, what's the next most important feature you'd want to talk about?
Just before we go to the ICG, one last thing I just want to share, because it's pretty important for a couple of users. If you wanted to see if a device received the last configuration or not, that's a point that you can now choose in the view. So this little blue eye, which is showing that the device didn't retrieve the last configuration set from the UMS, is now something you can use in a view. So if you want to check which device didn't receive the last configuration set, that's something that you could see in the view. Just wanted to share that one.
Oh, that's good. That's really good to know. Is that because the user declined it or because it failed or both?
More or less everything. So as soon as a comment that you sent from the UMS to the endpoint didn't reach it, it can be a network issue that the device went offline, didn't boot it up since the last time you sent out the command, you name it. And that's something you can now check in a view and say, okay, this device is wasn't there for a couple of, let's say, weeks and didn't got that important configuration, like, I don't know, the last root issuing CA or the new URL for your Netscaler. And there you can be active and asking them maybe to reboot that device or to check where the communication went down.
Okay, that's good.
All right, one thing, Yeah, I want to make sure we didn't forget. So it's with 607, they announced official support for a UMS single server installation, not the HA piece, along with the Nigel Cloud Gateway, completely hosted in Azure or AWS, for example. And so there's an article on kind of walking you through that. Now, people are probably saying, well, I've already come in doing that. Yeah, there's more specifics there with IGEL kind of getting to a place where potentially in the future you might have UMS offered up as a marketplace, like similar to what we've got the ICG, or at least a virtual machine that could become prepped and ready, and then you can install ICG on it. So if you want to, you know, try out this article that came out with this release, and you have access to an Azure environment, and you want to walk through and just kind of try it out and see if everything works as advertised. If you find something in the instructions that are not quite clear or whatever, there's a feedback button on every single article. Click on that, and it'll send an article or send an email to the product, the documentation team, and you just say, "Hey, this was unclear," and let them know. I'm looking for the right information, or this is what I ended up doing to get it working. They'll take that feedback, and they can usually turn around an update to the article within, you know, a day or two. So, but that is it's a good set of instructions, you know, how to launch the virtual machine, name it, and then go through the whole Azure resource group information, and then fire up your ICG. So I think that's setting the stage for what's coming, which would be a more fully rich article on the whole, you know, UMS architecture, HA included, in cloud hosted environments. So
okay. No, that's great.
Seb, any thoughts on that that particular change?
No, just thinking, Chris, to bring that up, I totally forgot to mention it. I saw it and just forget it. So perfect. Thank you for the heads up.
Yeah, disclaimer. I've been running ICG in Azure with my UMS server for 2 years. So
we all do more or less, but it's good to know that it wasn't supported for a couple of years between launch and now. But yeah,
I will say this. Okay, just something. I wasn't sure if I'd mention this on the podcast, but what the heck. I thought I ran into a serious bug. Turns out it may not be, but when I initially set up my UMS in Azure, I didn't initially rename my Windows server. So I had this long 64 plus character host name on my server. And I'm certain that I didn't change it before I installed UMS. So when UMS 601 at the time got installed, the certificate that was generated had this really long Azure generated server name. Everything has been fine for a number of years, and then I go to upgrade from 1104 to 5, and the 1105 device registers fine or gets upgraded, reboots, and all of a sudden I can't talk to it, can't manage it. Simple fix at the end of the day. I just in the remote management piece, I just shortened the name or cleared it out, and then it reconnected fine. But long story short, if you're going to build a server in Azure, per the instructions, before you install UMS, just make sure your server name is less than 64 characters. You should be fine. So,
cool info. Thank you.
And I'm sure you were scared to death that something was either a bug or you broke something big time. You know, it's more often than not in my history that it's something simple that I just overlooked. You know, fat finger an IP address and everything breaks, but you start thinking the worst almost instantly.
Absolutely, because I tested multiple. I had other engineers on my team. They had the same incident. Everybody's thinking there's something messed up with your environment. Mine's working fine, and it wasn't until yesterday when one of our rock star SEs, Wes, got on a session with me. We looked at it, and he noticed that after the reboot, the 1105 was just not communicating or something like that, and we nailed it down to the server name, modified that, and lo and behold, all of a sudden it came back up, and you know, you're good to go. So then we traced it back to when I installed UMS for the first time. So I'm going to build a new Azure server, rename it before I install UMS, and then I should be good. So lesson learned.
And then you also have the, okay, what changed, and is everybody else still working? All those.
Oh yeah. Did I just uncover a massive bug? I mean, 1104 is fine. 1105, what's going on? And turns out it was just the name of the server. That's all. So But there is a cool thing in that article. They do talk about some certificate related things. We won't go into detail, but some very specifics about how when you do install UMS, you can, you know, either replace it with a public one, but also have some information on there communicating with the UMS server. Obviously, I think you're not going to open up ports directly to your UMS server in a cloud environment. You're going to go through an ICG, any devices that are coming through there. So that's obviously the best practice, but there's some information in there that's new, I think, as of 6.07 that you get familiar with. So, but the nice thing is you have an article, and if you want to practice your skill set with an Azure-based UMS and ICG, go for it.
Yeah.
Give us feedback.
So as we move it to the next feature, let's try to make this next one ICG related. Is there anything that's hot regarding ICG in this latest pair of releases?
In my opinion, not that much. I tested the ICG release. It's just pretty stable, and it's just a little bit more reactive when sending comments to the device and getting information back from the device. But honestly, even if you look at the release notes, the biggest changes happened on the system level. So updating some components, some dependencies, and obviously security fixes related to the components we are using for the ICG, to the Tomcat, etc. But from the rest, it's more bug fixing. So there is not that much to share, even if the heartbeat feature is also included through ICG. So that's a couple of enhancements we already covered with the UMS part. But I don't know, Chris, if you have something else to share, but the ICG isn't a big feature enhancement that time.
Well, before you guys struggle to find stuff, it's probably good for our listeners. It's good for me to hear that there's not a lot of changes to ICG, right? That's that kind of middleman communicator piece that you don't want to be changing a lot, because it's you rely on it so heavily, and you don't want to really shake things up. And maybe kudos for IGEL for keeping it simple and just keeping that middleman piece just steady state and just fixing tweaks, not trying to reinvent it constantly.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton here. It was definitely, I'm just looking at the release notes as we're talking. So those UMS related things that were mentioned earlier, those are noted regarding, you know, sending a message to a device if it's not currently connected or something. And then, of course, there's some improvements between UMS ICG synchronization and then, of course, the Java and Tomcat updates. So that's pretty much it on the ICG piece.
Let's get back to the sexy part. How about UMS? What's the next thing we want to cover there?
Say that. What's up? What do you think, Sebastian?
Update of HA is now way easier to handle than before. I cannot thank our development guys enough to keeping up that just simple process a little bit even easier now, because if for our listeners who are using UMS HA cluster since years, or just since it was included in the IGLOS Workspace Edition licensing by default, the HA isn't an easy to handle system. Even, and Chris, I don't know if you would agree, but even for us as an IGL employee, it's still partially, I would say, at least a black box. And I would lie if I would say that I was feeling pretty confident during updating a productive HA environment on some enterprise customers. I can say now that I sweat a lot, and I sometimes cried when I was still a smoker during my smoke cigarette break, because I was just saying, okay, what happens now if I broke up their database? What happens now? And I had a couple of moments where it was an issue, but I have also a lot of luck. So I would say I'm still alive, so it couldn't be that bad. But the update process, to come back to your question, Andy, is now a way easier. So the data loss process, where you had an update database and an external database, where you had to sync everything again after the last node update, is now really straightforward. So you can more or less just go through you without saying next, finish, go to the next system, do the same there. And you do not have to be scared about the update database, which is not synced back to the main database anymore. That's a huge improvement in my opinion. And I'm feeling now way better when updating even my own UMSHA cluster.
Yeah, I think there's two things in this article I posted here. And I think it really comes down to just a central database thing, right? I know at my time at Imprivata, we kind of faced a similar thing when we finally went to an enterprise architecture. One of the things that they had to ultimately get to was a zero downtime upgrade. And so IGL has that with the old way of doing this, right? The database is temporarily copied off, and then the UMS servers go through these updates, and eventually things, you know, come back. But it takes a longer time to do that. And so what is introduced now is a shorter downtime of the servers, which is sort of the recommended way. But here's the thing, right? We all know, for those that have been around IGL for a while, that the device, unless you're using some kind of shared workspace, you know, where you're logging in and you're actually going through the UMS type thing, getting user-based profiles, you know, the device, if it's not connected with ICG or directly to UMS, it'll hold on to its configuration. The users, generally speaking, can still work. But this gives a shorter downtime for updating HA configuration. And it just kind of walks through that process very nicely and doesn't really say expect this amount of downtime. I think a lot depends on the database size.
So Chris, quite often when I'm talking to customers, I tell them not to worry about HA for the UMS because of what you just said, right? It caches that configuration, and if it's down, it just keeps working. How often do you guys see customers actually implementing an HA UMS solution to begin with?
Great question. So I think when you're talking to enterprise level customers, right? Fortune 500s or whatever, they're going to expect something like this HA architecture, you know, for, you know, fear of the, you know, whatever. Now, an SMB, let's say, I don't know, I'll just pick a number, 5,000 devices and lower. You're not talking about an issue with the UMS server in terms of being able to handle that. You know, one UMS server properly spec can handle thousands and thousands of devices. And so when does it make sense to have an HA scenario is a great question. You know, I think best practice is, and one example, I won't name the customer, but, you know, one we've promoted many times before is, you know, 30,000 plus devices, one UMS server with an external database. I don't remember if ICG was involved, but that server, you know, properly spec'd, you know, I think it had like maybe 16 gigs of RAM or something like that. I mean, it completely handled everything fine. I don't remember if it was Windows or Linux, but regardless, that was kind of, you know, one scenario, right? And you're right. I mean, those configs of the devices, when UMS is getting updated, they're going to remain the same. And when UMS comes back up, you're good to go. So we have on our website sort of best practice architectures. When does it make sense to then add a second or a third server for UMS? Obviously, it gets more complicated. I think some of that might be based on the network situation. Devices and regions around the world potentially. Sebastian, I don't know if you've got any thoughts on when does it make sense to just add a second server for HA and the types of customers that you've worked with.
I was waiting for your answer because it's, I guess, sometimes also related to the country where you're living.
I think his answer was it depends.
It does. It very much. I agree. Yeah. Sorry. It's a long way to say it. The freaking depends. Sorry.
Go ahead, Sebastian. Let's get your take on.
No, sure. But sometimes it's really related also to the country and to the market you are looking at. So I was waiting for the American approach of doing that because sometimes I remember at the beginning, as I started as IGL, every German customers or let's say Central European customers like banks that are didn't even ask if we have an HA, they assumed it. And when thinking about that, I guess we have a couple of regulatory. Sometimes it's related to legal stuff where every server which is implemented into the data center has to be redundant, even if it's used or not, but it has to be redundant because there are some law regulatories that oblige the customer to do that, or even if the data center is redundant, they have to do that. And that's one approach. The second one, so that's mostly on assurance and healthcare and banks on my side. And on the other hand, we had all that stuff related to the load balancing. Load balancing in that specific term was related to the standard communication between the endpoint and the UMS and from the UMS to the endpoint. And there I'm speaking about a period of time where we use the 32-bit Tomcat and UMS version. So we didn't have the chance to allocate all the memory, all the RAM of the servers. We couldn't just use a small amount of them, and we had to tweak around about how often would the device report back their update status, their status to the UMS, how many parallel threads can we open to send a comment or send, information to the endpoint about the UMS itself. And since we moved to the 64-bit version, honestly, I'm not using HA that often, besides the fact that we have low regulatory sometimes. But one UMS server, if you don't have a specific need for redundancy because you are obliged to, honestly, keep it simple. Use one UMS server. Think about having an external SQL database, which makes, in my opinion, more sense than having a huge amount of UMS servers, because the database is mostly having a lot of load when it comes to configuration itself and to store and request information back. So since we removed the old cache and use a new one in the 64-bit, honestly, I'm not seeing HA as a big feature set we are using quite often.
So I think Seb's answer, which I think is similar to mine, is avoid the complexity if you don't need it, right?
Yeah. Yes. So
just because you're an enterprise account doesn't mean you have to have complexity. The same solution, because of the way the system works, is going to work for SMB all the way to enterprise. If you have regulatory issues and you have to have redundancy and everything, then explore it, but try to avoid it. Not because it doesn't work. It's just because you don't need the complexity.
Yeah. I think my last comment on there is certainly, you know, if there's no need, you know, because of those customer requirements, you start right, scale it initially. If you need to then add later on, you know, have it in such a way that you're ready to do that. But you're right. One UMS server is not like all of a sudden, oh my gosh, I can't, you know, I hit a limit at 2,500 devices, right? Or so. No way. One UMS server properly spec can handle, again, thousands of devices, because it's, you know, again, it's not like the devices are constantly chattering back and forth to UMS to get some kind of configuration setting from them. They've got it, they'll stick with it. And then unless the UMS has something to add for it or whatever, you know, so, I mean, I could literally shut my UMS server down in Azure and my devices will be completely fine and as long as I need to use them. I mean, it's that simple. But get familiar with the HA piece. You know, if you have admin, build it out in your own lab, you know, get familiar with what that looks like. Try these new updates, you know, going through this process. I mean, and give some feedback, right? I mean, that's really what we would love for the community at large, you know, to hear this stuff. And if you find that some of the instructions that are listed are maybe not quite clear, again, provide some feedback and we'll make it right.
Yeah. Okay. We got time for one more topic, guys. What's the one more thing you want people to know about this release of the UMS and ICG, if you had a chance to, you know, spend an elevator ride for 110 stories with someone?
Well, that would be difficult because we already discussed a couple of interesting topics until now. So,
well, I just asked two engineers that question, and then I started to hesitate and said, "Oh, there's no telling what we might come back with." And I include myself in that bucket, by the way. But you've got 30 more seconds, kinda. You got one more thing to tell people about. What would you tell them?
Please disable the asset inventory tracker if you don't have the EMP, because it's just blowing up your database and it creates an overload of communication. If you don't need the adverse inventory tracker, which is, in my opinion, more or less a useless feature, but that's just my personal opinion.
So that was definitely the engineer inside of you, Seb, coming out for that one.
Might be, or just a second personality.
Yeah. I think that's a good, I was going to say, when he mentioned that, I was like, that's a good one. We didn't really talk too much about it, but you have the ability now to disable AIT if you don't want it.
And what would be the downside of doing that, guys? I get the upside, right? We keep our database smaller and cleaner. What's the downside?
The address inventory track is a cool feature if you want to see which kind of devices you have connected to your endpoint, specifically licensed dongles, etc.
Yeah, I think probably from a pulling that information out of the database, I mean, I think it does add additional traffic going back into the UMS database. So if you don't necessarily need it, because you're not necessarily doing an audit or whatever inventory on what's actually plugged in, then just disable the feature. That was not possible with the OS 11 licensing where it was included. For example, now you can just turn it off. So I think as a result, you can expect performance benefits.
Okay.
Of unknown kind.
Guys, we're out of time on this one. If you want to revisit it, maybe have a part two of this one, happy to do so. I know we've got plenty of other blogs we want to cover as well going forward. I appreciate you guys joining. And, you know, let's the listeners don't know this, but we changed topics last minute to get something that was even more current on the agenda for today. So that's great. Guys, any parting things you want the group to know outside of what we covered here, Seb, from you?
I would say please try to keep your devices updated, because I don't want to spread it quite widely, but just remember that there are a few bug fixes and also security fixes in the actual versions, especially the AgileOS version. So please, even if you're using OS 10, don't forget to update, because there might be some security stuff you might want to cover.
Yeah. And it's also job security. That's one way to
agree.
Chris, anything from you?
That's a good point. I think to be more specific, 11.05.120, there is an 10.06 version as well that just came out a week or two ago with some of those security updates. So if you haven't downloaded or installed those yet, that would be what we're talking about here.
Well, this is probably a good segue into another topic, and that's the ability to do IGEL updates from an online service, which I have a sense you guys are working on. And if we can maybe cover that in a future conversation, that would be great.
Sounds like a top secret topic. So happy to talk about it when we can.
Well, when we're able to talk about it, let's talk about it.
We might get killed, so we have to be careful.
Yeah, we don't want to get Matthias mad at us, right?
That's right. Make sure he doesn't listen to this awesome podcast we just recorded and which we'll soon delete, right?
So speaking of the podcast, I've got probably another week or so to get my office organized here and get things ready to go. And then probably what we're going to do, guys, we're going to turn this into a live podcast where we record the audio and the video, and we allow people to drop in and come ask us questions and make it a little bit more collaborative. I guess I'm not really asking you guys. I'm telling you guys that's what the future of this is, but I think you guys will embrace that. But getting excited about doing more of this and making it more of an open dialogue with customers and partners and others.
Awesome. Should we wear a tie or a suit next time? So,
no, just make sure you keep the camera pointed up at your face, and then you can wear whatever you want.
Yeah. Well, I am wearing this awesome IGEL Zintegra shirt, and but I'll keep my saw sharpened and wait for the stump to chump. The sessions to begin. So
yeah, well, we'll have to limit it a little bit, right? We could just sit here and answer questions the whole time, but certainly want to open it up to the public and make this more of a webinar type thing that we release both the video and the audio onto the internet, and just get a little more out of the traction that we're getting here.
Awesome. Looking forward to it, Andy.
So guys, more to come, and I appreciate you guys joining today. Thank you.
All right, take
care. Welcome. What a pleasure.